Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production, available on Apple Podcasts and Podcast One.
Hey, thank you very much for tuning in today. We are doing another special edition of Beyond the Darkness. This is a replay of our very first interview with Lorraine Warren in honor of her passing. We just thought, since yesterday we played her final interview, we'd be remiss if we didn't go back and play our very first interview, our very favorite interview with Lorraine Warren. So we aired this again on Podcast One here about two and a half years ago. But we thought, just as a reminder for many of you that are newer subscribers or have popped on and didn't get a chance to hear it, we'd make the audio available for you. So in its entirety, our very first interview from back in, I believe, 2006 with Lorraine Warren.
Good evening and welcome to The Darkness on the Edge of Town. I'm your host, Dave Schrader. Along with me, as always, my co-host and producer, Tim. Good evening, Tim.
Howdy.
Tonight, Tim, we've got a really cool guest coming onto the show. This is somebody that anybody that's involved in the paranormal or research has probably read one of their books, has seen a movie based on one of their stories, or so on. We've got with us a psychic researcher, paranormal investigator, Lorraine Warren. Good evening, Lorraine. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good evening, David. It's nice to be with you.
I appreciate you spending the time with us this evening to talk about your cases. And, you know, most people, and we'll mention this real quickly up front just to get it out there, and then we'll talk about the other stuff that we've got. Most people are going to be familiar with you from the Amityville Horror case.
Yes, well, our career went farther back than the Amityville Horror, but the Amityville Horror is probably the most publicized haunting in the world, because it didn't matter what countries that we were in, even non-speaking, or, people not speaking the English language, everybody knew about Amityville. It's just, it's like the movie The Exorcist, which, of course, was based on a true case history that my husband had the true files of. The actual files, I should put it that way.
On the real Exorcist case?
Yes.
Well, I didn't know that you were involved in that in a sense as well.
Oh, yes.
So
but
now...
These are all cases that are brought to the public's attention. But remember, the cases of that nature are happening all the time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not brought into the public focus, And when, as your opening stated about people not escaping it, there's one of the only ways to not escape it, or one of the ways to best escape it, I should put it that way, is to not get involved with occult practices.
Definitely, yeah. We've heard that from quite a few of the experts that we've had on the show
throughout
the last year here. Now, let me ask you, you said that you're together you guys have been investigating the paranormal and doing psychic research for quite a few years before the Amityville Horror. Could we start at the beginning here? You and Ed met. How did you realize that you both had an interest? Yeah, how did you realize that you both had an interest in the paranormal and decide to go into this venture?
Wow. Nobody ever does that, David. That's nice. We met. I have never dated anybody but my husband. I met my husband when I was 16 years old. I was attending a private Catholic girls' school. I was home for the summer. My husband was an usher in the theater that I went to one evening with a group of girls from CYO, which is a Catholic youth organization. And they introduced me to him. And I had never been out, you know, I had never dated or anything. Yeah, it didn't seem like it was important to me at that time in my life. And I met Ed, and we did date, but it wasn't like you'd call serious dating, you know. And he went into the Navy at age 17, and he was a hero in World War II. His ship went down in the North Atlantic on February 5th, and of 1945, I have to stop and think sometimes.
Sure.
And we were married on survivor's leave. Now, he never talked about the home that he grew up in, nor did I talk about the things that happened to me. I didn't. I thought no one had really any understanding of things that I tried to explain, where I could see lights around people. And certain people's lights were much brighter than others. And I didn't know what it meant. The nuns at school kind of frowned upon it. And my parents, who were very, very loving Irish Catholic parents, and really didn't understand it. And I could see it put stress on them, as well as the nuns at school. So I more or less kept my feelings to myself, what I could see. But I didn't know that I was looking at the human aura of people. I didn't really understand that at all. I didn't know why.
Were they colored lights, or was it just light surrounding them?
It started with mainly the lightness, but then it began to develop into color. I have never had training in my work. It's all been very, very natural. But I did know, or didn't when I first started to talk about it, I felt everybody could see this, David.
Mm-hmm.
I did not realize that, you know, I didn't know what psychic meant.
Sure.
I didn't know what the word aura meant. I didn't know any of these things. But I did know that the night I met my husband, that something did happen. But why it happened, I didn't know. And why I moved to do what I did at that time, I still don't know. But he was going to walk all of us girls home. And so as a result of it, we passed his home first, and we convinced him he didn't have to walk us home, you know. And so he was just talking and chatting and doing things like that with us, very clean-cut kid. I can still remember even what he was wearing. I can remember what I was wearing that many years ago. And he ran across the street to go up the couple of steps into his home, and that young, athletic, 140-pound kid, I didn't see him. I could see my husband as he appeared to me in my mind's eye as he looked just before my husband collapsed over 5 years ago.
Wow.
And I wrote in my diary, "I'll spend the rest of my life with you." But I never told him that until well after our marriage and our daughter was born. And he always just kidded about it. He made light of it. He would say such things. They call that entrapment.
Right.
And so
anyway, that was really love at first sight, huh?
It was love at first sight.
That's cool.
Yeah. And, I mean, he had dated. I had not. But, I mean, he was never involved in any other serious relationship. So, all right, he comes home, and he picked up, you know, his education and things of that nature. He picked that all up, and then he went to school for art. He went to art school. He went to Pierre Art School, which was a subsidiary of Yale at that time.
Okay.
And we made our living as artists for many, many years, and the art funded us and enabled us to travel. And my daughter, our daughter, Judy, would stay with my parents. And that is how we made our living. He began to talk about this home he grew up in Bridgeport and the things that happened. My reply would always be to him, honey, you're not supposed to believe in things like that. You're Catholic the same as I am. And when people die, they either go, you know, to heaven, hell, or purgatory.
Can you give us a little insight? What type of things did Ed see growing up? What was
at
his home?
He lived in a home from the age of 5 until the age of 12 that had an enormous impact on his life. The things that happened in that home were so terrifying and so frightening that if he went home as a young boy and no one was home, his father was on the state police, if no one was home, he would sleep outside rather than to go in that house.
Wow.
It was so bad, the things that happened in that home. He talked about the clergy always being there and always blessing the home, but there was never, ever an answer to what took place in that house and why these things occurred.
Was Ed an only child?
No, Ed had a twin sister and an older brother. In fact, his older brother was 5 years older than him, and his older brother passed away maybe about 7 or 8 years ago now. And on his deathbed, Ed said to him, "Where were you, Frank? Where were you when all of that stuff happened in that Jane Street house?" And he said, he told my husband for the first time, both of them as older men now, I could never stay in that house. That house was so bad. And he would say he was in sports. He would stay either at the coach's home. He would stay with a neighbor. He would stay with friends. But he never wanted to stay in that house.
Did it affect Ed's sister as well?
The sister would always be with the mother. She would, wherever the mother would go, sister would go. But the boys were brought up to believe they were men. You know, men can
right.
take care of themselves.
Right.
You know, and I guess that's how it developed his maturity to be able to enlist in the Navy and to make 4 crossings across the North Atlantic in active duty before he ever reached his 18th birthday.
Wow.
So, of course, naturally, it builds a lot of character, and he does have tremendous character. And everybody will talk about that. So he began to talk about it, and this is what really, it really boils down to this, David.
Okay.
He needed to satisfy his curiosity regarding what occurred in that home. Did that really happen to other families or was his family just picked to have that happen? And what did it all mean?
Were his parents affected by what was going on in that house?
Definitely.
Okay, so it wasn't just something
As soon as
mom and dad came home, everything settled down.
Okay. That's why the mother wouldn't stay home and the father was working and everything. And so, anyway, as a result of all of this, you begin to realize that he began to realize that he wasn't all alone.
Right.
You know, but every haunting, as every family, are not the same. The emotional makeup of people who live in these homes are very, very important. And the structure of the family is very, very important. Now, Ed's dad was very, very religious, but very, very stern. A very stern man. And so, you know, that's how he treated his family. Exactly that way. I could never say nothing about his father. Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I can't say anything about his parents, period.
Right.
But for him, that had an impact on his life. His whole life was affected by that. There was never answers. So when I would say things to him like, I can't believe that you want to do this. I can't believe you want to go in these places, because I don't.
Right.
No, I don't.
You were the voice of reason, huh?
I don't want to go in these places.
Sure.
But the more I was going in, the more homes that I would go into, and to be very personal about it with you, I didn't think I was doing something that was right, so I would confess it. I would go to confession as a Catholic and confess to doing this. because I felt I was doing something wrong. And, of course, it took a long, long time, and it took counseling with a Catholic exorcist to make me realize that, you know, what I was doing was perfectly all right. It was what was motivating me to do it, and that was very positive. And my psychic ability developed right along with it. So when I would go in, everything that has happened to me regarding my own psychic ability has happened very naturally. So I discern in these homes what is going on. I discern for cases like the possession cases. I discern for the police where murders and things of that nature are concerned. That has been my role, but always working with my husband.
Great.
I have been, during a period of time, some years ago now, we were out in California, and I became involved with Dr. Thelma Moss and Dr. Johnson at UCLA, where they were doing research on Kirlian photography. That is the ability to photograph the human aura around every living object that God created. That fascinated me. Here is an answer for me. Here is something that I had been able to see from the time I was a little 9-year-old girl, that I could see these lights around people. And as a result of that, now science is being able. So they wanted to, although science had the answer for being able to read these things, which is quite fascinating, by the way.
And when you were able to see these auras, when you saw the photography, did the pictures match up with the colors and the lights
yes,
that you saw?
Yes, they do.
Okay.
So what they wanted to do with me, what they had asked if they could do, they would allow me to work with them in the lab if I allowed them to work with me as a natural psychic.
All right.
No training.
Sure.
And so, and certainly no books. And so as a result of that, that gave me confidence, you know, and then working with this priest, this Father Charbonneau, that also, who, by the way, became a very personal friend to Ed and myself, and had worked a great deal and still very much involved in our life. And so that's kind of the stepping stones that got us started into the work we're involved in today.
Were you seeing spirits growing up as well, or were you just seeing the aura lights?
I was just seeing the aura. I never did begin to actually see spirits until I started going in these homes where active phenomena was going on. But seeing the aura, and then the next step of that would have been the spontaneous thing that happened to me at age 16.
Well, you know what? Why don't we cover that? We're going to go to a quick break here. For those of you that are just tuning in, you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest is Lorraine Warren. She's a psychic researcher, a paranormal investigator, and along with her husband, Ed Warren, they are probably two of the most prominently and well-known paranormal and psychic investigators in the world. We'll be back to talk more with Lorraine about her personal experiences and along with what she did with Ed throughout the long and illustrious career that they've had investigating the paranormal. We'll do that right after this.
We thought El Chupacabra meant the cup of coffee in Spanish.
Mi amo Eduardo Especial. ¿Cómo está el yay?
What are you talking about, Willis?
Shows you what we know. Stay tuned. There's more to come. From the darkness on the edge of town.
60 seconds. That's exactly how long this commercial lasts. You know what else you can do in about a minute? You can get an offer for your car with TrueCar. That's right. In the amount of time it takes to floss your teeth, pet your dog, do a few sit-ups, or just listen to my voice, you can get a true cash offer. Best of all, you can do it from your smartphone or home. Just go to TrueCar and simply enter your license plate number and watch how your car's details pop up. Answer a few questions, and you'll get an accurate true cash offer from a local True Car certified dealer. It's just that easy. After that, you can bring your car in, and they'll check it out with you together. You can ask questions and get the answers you need, so there's never any surprises. Then simply leave with your check or trade in your car for a new ride. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, check out TrueCar today.
They're hardly beautiful and barely average. In fact, when they were both born, the doctor slapped their moms instead of them.
I will slap you so hard you end up in the Ming Dynasty.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town with Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis.
Good evening and welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town. Thank you for joining us this evening. If you're listening to us on OmniSound Radio 1, make sure you tune in there. You can also join into the chat room and talk with other listeners. Or if you're listening to us live on our website at darknessradio.com, we welcome you. We also ask you to join in on our forum there. Just click the Discuss tab and you can join in and talk to other members that are there. We're also over in the Infinity Paranormal chat room and you can link to that from our listen page. So please do check in and talk and share with the rest of the paranormal fans out there. Our guest this evening is Lorraine Warren. Lorraine and Ed Warren have been paranormal investigators and psychic researchers for decades and have covered some of the most amazing cases in the world. And right now we're going back in time. We're trying to find out a little bit about Lorraine and Ed when they started this. And as we heard in the first segment, we were talking about her meeting Ed and Ed's fascination with the paranormal and her abilities to see the aura around people and being able to test it against actual photography that could do the same thing. So just before we went to break, you said that there was something that really kind of kicked it into gear for you to let you know that you're on the right path. Why don't we continue there, Lorraine?
Well, I guess once I realized regarding the aura, that kind of opened my eyes to the fact, not the important aspect of the fact that science was able to prove something of that nature, but the fact that that must have meant that there were many people that were also seeing that. Otherwise, why would that research being done in the area of
exactly
of Curly and photography? And now, after all these years, there is a man in Moscow, and he's an attorney, and I'm on. You know, I've talked with him all the time, and he is involved with the Orthodox Russian Orthodox Church over there. In helping them, involved in exorcisms and all. And I've been helping him with this, you know, with these cases and helping him to better understand and teaching him things that are helpful to him. And somehow the subject that you just interviewed me regarding myself and the Curly and photography, And he pronounced it a little different with his Russian dialect, and said about his dad. His dad was one of the inventors of that.
Oh, wow.
And I think, you know, what a small, small world.
And especially when you get into the paranormal, it seems everybody is connected now.
Exactly. You do in one way or the other. So that in itself, but finding out that in no way whatsoever was I going against any aspects of my faith that's always been important to us.
Sure.
Our faith is something that's very, very important to Ed and I.
Well, it would have to be with what you guys have been up against. You have to have some serious faith, I would guess, to go up against demons and mm-hmm. Evil entities and things like that.
You do, exactly. And my husband, of course, chose to study the area of religious demonology. And as a lay person, there were very, very few. I know you can go on the internet today and you will see many of them referring to themselves as they are not. You know, I don't know why whether they seem to like the title or think it gives them importance or what. But Ed put tremendous amount of energy and time and not just understanding our own faith, but understanding other religions and interviewing and talking to clergy and studying both the New Testament and the Old Testament. And we've worked with rabbis. We've worked with Buddhist monks in the mountains of Japan. We worked a great deal with the Anglican Church in the United Kingdom for 27 years. So it isn't just we stay steadfast to our Catholic faith, but we work with all of these religious clergy, and we will always make a point of saying we would kneel. We would kneel for a rabbi. We would kneel for a Buddhist monk. We would kneel for any of them just as we would for a Catholic priest.
Out of respect, sure. Now, did you find by doing these travels, all these different cultures and religions, were you finding the same type of events happening throughout the entire world?
Yes, you were. You were fighting exactly the same thing in all these different cultures. So because of that, their rights might be different. Say the Buddhist monks, to have the honor of going into these monasteries, myself as a woman, to go into these monasteries and work with them, to do it with the Catholic clergy where you're the cloistered clergy are concerned in the Catholic faith, and me as a woman to go in, wow. You don't really know what that is like, you know.
Now, can I ask you a question? Now, you've seen spirits, you've seen physical manifestations of spirits. Do they have auras as well?
It depends. All right. Remember, when a spirit appears, what they are being fed through our energy. Without the energy, they can't manifest.
All right.
So it's us that is activating that spirit. We're doing that, or the energy of the room, or the energy of other people, or the energy of nature is what is activating the spirit. That's why you see it today in so many photographs, these ghost globules, you know, all these. And if you study this, if you watch the progression of them, what will happen, David, is they begin to form all into this big, huge veil, which is a ghost veil. And you can see it. We have evidence of it, where it touches down, like onto the ground, and then goes up into the atmosphere. That is what the spirit is drawing from in order to be able to manifest. In order to be able to show themselves, say, on film, when you take a photograph of a ghost or any spirit, when you are able to get that in a photograph, you are not photographing a ghost. You are not. They are implanting their image onto your film. That is what is taking place at that time.
Okay. That seems to make sense.
Yes.
So do you see the auras then around them? Or if you do, is it usually, I'm sitting here looking at Tim, he's got a purple aura around him, a spirit is making itself known, is it drawing its, will the aura I see around the spirit most likely just be an extension of Tim's or my aura?
Like attracts like.
Okay.
So let's say something is going to manifest. It's going to be attracted by your aura.
Okay.
Not as a man or a woman or as a young child, or it's going to be attracted by your aura. Like attracts like. And that is why people going out and taking these photographs of ghosts, you always, when you're doing it, always shoot three or four times in one location.
Right.
To give it the opportunity, you know, to manifest. So, in other words, David, you and I and your producer could all, the three of us could be out there. It's only going to be attracted to one of us, not to all of us. And we may not see it with the physical eye, or we may.
Well, that was another question I had here. Now, I was wondering, you know, there are so many cases where only one person in the group can see a spirit.
Exactly.
So is that because they're leeching maybe... Maybe this spirit is able to tap into my energy flow so it can make itself almost like a little movie. It's showing itself to me.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so it's tapping into my...
Or you're that psychically sensitive.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's more than one rule of thumb.
All right. That makes a lot of sense. I can see that working a lot more, that they're using our energy and our personal energy, and if it's like attracts like, that this spirit can see that I'm the person in this group that they would most be able to communicate with. Maybe we're on the same wavelength, if you will.
Exactly.
So they come in and they blend into my energy field, which allows me to see them and why other people may not.
Mm-hmm.
And it probably depends on your energy field, how strong it is, if it allows other people to see it as well.
Well, it would depend, like I say, about the like attracting trait. You know that there are people that if you went into a crowded room, or even if you were in a place that you public place and you were either lost, you know that you're going to look around for that one person to approach.
Sure.
We all do.
It's like Tim and I, like attracts like, two big fat bald guys.
Yeah.
We're the exact same.
With the same name?
Well, close enough. Well, actually, is Tim David Dennis, and I'm David Schrader, so we're close enough. And
wow.
I'm
yes,
legally,
I would say so.
I'm legally changing my name to David Schrader later this year, so
yes.
So we will be alike in that respect.
Well, that's amazing. yes, like attract, it definitely does attract like. And you see it all the time. You have to realize. And then you know these people that seem to go through life and they just seem to attract people to them.
Right.
Not because they're so handsome, because they're so beautiful, but what is it? What does it mean?
It's that energy and that light that they're putting
exactly
out.
Right.
Like a moth to a flame.
Exactly.
You just have that light burning and it draws you in. Okay, I can see that.
Yeah.
Now let me ask you, now you two, Ed and yourself, have discussed your pasts and your abilities and his want to go out and help people so that they're not going through what he went through.
Not at first it wasn't help.
Oh, okay.
Oh, we didn't know. We didn't know what to do to help
sure
him.
Okay.
No.
It was just to investigate?
It was just to satisfy his curiosity.
Okay.
And then we realized it was falling into all of these different categories. You know, they weren't all the same. What did that mean?
Do you remember the first investigation that the two of you went out on to try to further this information?
One of the first was mind-boggling for me. And that was, Ed, we were making a delivery of paintings in New Hampshire. And this other couple wanted to go with us. And so they were going to go with us. They hadn't started their family yet. And Judy was just a baby, so she was going to stay home with my mom and dad. And so we went up there to make this delivery of paintings. And Ed spotted a sign and was called Henniker. And he said, Henniker? And he made this big deal out of it. He said, I read about this haunting that takes place in this town of Henniker. And his buddy, who had been a childhood buddy of Ed's, and said to him, there must be a million Hennikers all over the place. He turned a curve in the road, and there was a sign. David, it is still there today.
Okay.
This is the only Henniker on earth. And so, anyway, we went to New England College, which was in its infancy then. You know, everybody there, the students were about the same age or maybe just a little younger than Ed and I and Jerry and Yolanda. So we went up and asked them if they knew anything about this Oceanborn Mary house. Oh, yes. So they told us how to get there. And this was a very, very unique kind of a haunting. And this woman's spirit continued to haunt this house. You want to see a spooky looking house. You would have to see this place. High on a hill, late at night, dirt road, and it's on a mountain. And we pull up. And now, this is something about myself I don't even understand to this day.
Okay.
I'm not afraid to enter a dark house.
Well, that makes one of the three of us here.
Well, I think it's because I've always been very secure. I was secure in my home. I'm secure in my faith, secure in my marriage. You know, I've just been always a very secure person. And I always felt that there was nothing that could hurt me mm-hmm. because I had faith. And so, anyway.
Even though driving up to this, I mean, what you just described sounds like the quintessential, like, Dracula's castle up
exactly,
on the sound.
Just exactly what it is.
Right, sitting there on the hilltop with the dark and the long, winding driveway and the creepy old house in the city. Oh, it's,
I can even tell you something about Dracula's home. Place, a castle.
Well, why don't we, you know, let's cut away real quick to a commercial. We'll come back, and then we'll hear more about this first investigation that you and Ed went on.
Oh.
And you're listening to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. Our guest this evening is Lorraine Warren. She is one half of the dynamic crime-fighting duo of Ed and Lorraine Warren that are psychic researchers and paranormal investigators. We'll be back with Lorraine and more of her stories right after this.
The New York Times has raved about the show. The Star Tribune says it's paranormally funny. And the Biscayne Bugle said, how could they put this crap on the air and live with themselves?
I am so, so sorry for everything that has happened. Because in spite of what Mike says now, it is my fault. Because it was my project. Everything had to be my way. And this is where we've ended up.
Stay tuned. There's more to come from the darkness on the edge of town.
Beyond the Darkness listeners, if you like this show, then you need to check out CarCast because it's the longest running automotive podcast. And if you're anything like Dave and I and you know a little bit about cars and you need to know more about cars, then CarCast is definitely the podcast you need to check out. CarCast is a twice weekly automotive show hosted by Adam Carolla, wrestling superstar Bill Goldberg, and Matt the Motorator D'Andrea. It's the only show of its kind that explores all aspects of the automotive space, from the performance aftermarket to new car buying and the future of the automotive industry. The guys answer your questions, they offer advice, and feature guests from the automotive industry and celebrity car enthusiasts. Listen to CarCast with Goldberg and Motorator Matt D'Andrea every Wednesday and Adam Carolla with Motorator every Friday on the Podcast One app or iTunes Podcasts.
Bigfoot, Nessie, Ogopogo, Yeti, Chupacabra. Please stop calling these guys names. Dave and Tim have feelings, you know.
Ugh, back to the lock with you, Nessie.
Welcome back to the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome back to the Darkness on the Edge of Town. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Our guest, if you've missed it, you've missed a great show. We've got Lorraine Warren on the phone, and she's a psychic researcher, a paranormal investigator, along with her husband, Ed Warren. They've been well-known in documented books and movies based on their cases and everything. It's an amazing lady, and what we're doing tonight is actually going back to the beginning. We're going through and learning a little bit about Ed and Lorraine and how they got started into the field of the paranormal. And just before the break, Lorraine was starting to talk to us a little bit about their first investigation. Now, we've only got about 15 minutes left on the show tonight, but Lorraine has graciously agreed to come back on our show from time to time and tell us about other stories and events and cases that she's worked on. But you were just telling us about this creepy old house on the hill now, Lorraine, and this
okay,
was the first one.
Let me finish with that.
Sure.
What had happened was we pulled up, and just the two couples, and it was a rickety old fence all out in front. It was a great big hulk of a home, and darkness, total darkness. And so I said I would go up to the door and ask, you know, whoever answered the door. And we knew that a man by the name of Lewis Roy owned the house, an old man. And we knew that much we knew. So as they watched from the car, they watched from the third floor of this house, they watched this light come all the way down to the second floor, down to the first floor, and then this little man, very small man, opened the door to me. And this is exactly what I told him. I told him that my husband was very, very interested in his home because of the haunting phenomena that had occurred in the house over a period of time. And I wondered if he would be gracious enough to let us come in and talk to him. And he said, certainly. And he did. So I beckoned for them to come. Now, this is what the light was. No central plumbing in the house, no central electricity in the house, no heating in the house. This is a cold October night. And so we went in, and the room that was off to the left mm-hmm. was a room that he used all the time during the colder weather. He had a bed in there. He had numerous shelves with books and art. Photographs. Right. He was a photographer, and this big potbelly stove. That was it. Okay. And he had a light on the end of 200 feet extension, and that's what he would walk around with for his lighting.
Okay.
That's what he improvised for his lighting. Primitive, yes. And so we sat down. And Ed began to interview him regarding the sightings of this woman referred to as Ocean-Born Mary. And Ocean-Born Mary had to do with a ship that was attacked by pirates crossing over from the UK into the United States. And this pirate, Pedro, was the man's name. He had said that this woman who was going into labor that was aboard, that he would spare them all if she named this baby after his mother, not knowing if it was going to be a boy or a girl. And thank God it was a girl.
Right.
And he named her Mary. And so that's how she became known as Ocean-Born Mary. And so anyway, she is the woman who haunts this home, I believe still to today, that she still haunts it. So he's going over all of these things with my husband. Now remember, this is all very Greek to me,
mm-hmm.
extremely Greek to me, not to Ed, but to me. So what happens is that we're sitting like in a semicircle, and I'm kind of partly behind my husband, and I have my arms on the back of his chair, Ed, and I'm listening. Now, this, my evaluation on this is important. I'm not thinking anything about anything psychic. So remember, I don't even know what that even means.
Right.
But what I'm thinking is how sincere this man is, how sincere you are. And I was able to discern that, not knowing I was discerning.
Right.
Just using common sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so all of a sudden, my ears began to ring. My ears rang so loud that it blotted out everything in that room. Blotted out my husband's voice, Mr. Roy's voice. And I couldn't hear anything, but I could see. And I was aware, totally aware. And it was as if somebody came behind me now and grabbed my shoulders, and there's a tremendous jolt to my body. I was out of my body, and I was on the second floor looking down. It was spontaneous. Everything that has happened to me regarding my ability has been things that happened spontaneously and naturally. And all of a sudden, Ed, I guess, needed to ask me something, and he turned, and he said that I just stared straight ahead, and he couldn't awaken me, and he became panicky, and he said to the man, he said, what's the matter with my wife? No, what's the matter with her? What's the matter with her? And he said, she must be psychic. He said, this happens to a lot of people who are clairvoyant. He said, clairvoyant. And he said, what do you mean clairvoyant? He said, she's my wife. He said, he didn't even realize, nor did I, what was really happening. That was in the late 40s.
Wow.
That is when that happened.
So were now, you able to see things around the house?
Beg pardon?
Were you able to see things around the house during this OB? Okay.
But see, that is exactly what the ghost is. That's what they can do. That's exactly what they can do. But it was not intimidating. David, it was not the least bit frightening. I wasn't the least bit frightened by what was happening to me.
Now, did you see the spirit in the house while you were doing this then?
I did not see the spirit in the house while I was, I was out of my body. We did return with this other couple, and we did see her coming right down the stairway, which was very, very beautiful.
Do you think that maybe you weren't so much having an out-of-body experience, but maybe you were linking in psychically and you were seeing through the ghost's eyes?
No, I was out of my body.
Okay.
I was out of my body. I was, you know, that's what they wanted. Everything that they were interested in doing with me at UCLA had to do with all my natural development.
Okay.
You know, not trained development or not programmed by somebody else, because that isn't natural at all. So everything that began to take place from that time on regarding my police work, regarding my research with my husband, regarding work for the federal government, everything all happened in a very natural, very spontaneous way.
Wow, that's amazing. So that was your first foray into really the paranormal investigations, and there you were right in the middle of it and having an experience like that. That's phenomenal.
Without truly knowing what was really going on.
Well, you know, one of the reasons we have you on the show today is that there is a special coming up on the Discovery Channel here, and it's booked for around July 27th. If not, it should be on shortly after then. Perhaps you could spend a few minutes and tell us a little bit about the case that you're going to be covering in that story on the Discovery Channel, so we can give a little background and history to people, and they make sure to tune in and check it out.
Okay, what is occurring? As far as I know, it is still scheduled to air on the 27th at 8 p.m., and it is a movie that was done regarding the Devil in Connecticut case that I believe they are referring to as either Where Evil Dwells or Where Devils Dwell. I believe it's Where Evil Dwells, that's the title of it. And what had happened in this case, it's a young boy. He was 11, 12 years old at the time that we were brought in by the Catholic Church regarding the possession of this child and the outward manifestations that would occur in the home and to him as a child. Doors were opened through occult practices. He turned out to be the most vulnerable in this home. And as a result of it, there were many exorcisms performed over him. There were six Roman Catholic priests, four of them schooled and ordained in Rome, that worked along with us on the case. And that has to do with this movie. And the title of the book, which will be out in print supposedly at the end of this month, and it'll go on our website, is The Devil in Connecticut. It'll come out in print again. Amazon.com brings back books on demand. And The Demonologist, which was the extraordinary career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, and now The Devil in Connecticut are two books that are on our website, which is warrens.net, www.warrens.net.
And that's warrens.net, not .com. Okay.
Yes.
All right. And you've got that there so that people can pick up a copy of the book and read about it and then see the movie as well.
Exactly.
Now, is this a movie or a documentary?
It's more or less a movie.
Okay.
It's more or less a movie, I believe, that they're, you know, it's hard to figure out the format when you're working with these companies. But New Dominion Pictures, everything is done with a great deal of respect, because the man who is really the president of it, a man by the name of Tom Norton, is a very Christian man. And everything, you know, he's not glorifying or over-dramatizing things of that nature. I was very impressed with working with him and working with the people that were doing the filming. So he has interviewed the sister of this boy, and not the guy himself. All of this took place in the early aging, the early 80s. He's now a man. David Guazzo is now a man, and, you know, married and involved with his life, and didn't want, you know, it doesn't really want to talk about that. Wants to, you know, really forget that part of his life when that all took place, and that's understandable. So, you know, regarding all of that, that's, you know, it's all going to be brought up, you know, until I see it myself, because I don't have, I haven't seen a viewing of it, so I haven't had that opportunity. And I gave my interview with them last November, and that's when we finished it and put it in the can back at that time, and it's going to be aired now. And then there's another case also with New Dominion Pictures. I believe they're called it's Haunted or something to do with haunting. A Haunted House, I forget, just it's a very simple title, and that's another one that's going to be airing that we finished up in the early fall.
Awesome. Well, that's great. So there's plenty of stories that are going to be coming out.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be sharing more. And can you give us a little update on Ed and how his health is holding up and how he's doing?
He is my husband's full care patient, so I ask for any of your viewers' prayers for
Certainly.
My husband, who's a very dear person. Love him dearly. We're married 61 years.
Oh, well, congratulations.
And anyway, he had been hospitalized with double pneumonia, which is super, super serious.
Mm-hmm.
And that was last month. And he's now getting on his feet again. And not, I don't mean getting on his feet. I mean coming back. He is not able to walk, or nor is he able to talk.
Mm.
So, but I can't.
Well, we'll certainly keep him in our prayers and our thoughts on the show, and we ask our listeners to do the same.
I appreciate that ever so much.
And if people need help, Lorraine, can they still contact you to get help?
Help at Warrens. Once you go on the site, go to help at warrens.net.
Okay. So it's help at warrens.net, and then you'll be able to get help there. And you can maybe direct people to where they can get help, or you can still come out and do something for them, correct?
Yes, exactly.
Great. Well, Lorraine, I can't thank you enough for being a part of our show this evening. And, you know, as I said, we have an open invitation. We'd love to have you back on the show here again in the future. So please feel free and let yourself know that you're welcome on our show at any time.
Thank you.
Thank
Look
you very much.
Look forward to being on with you again.
Well, we'd love to, and just scratch the surface here with what's going on. You want to make sure that you check out the Discovery Channel around July 27th for Where Evil Dwells. It's an amazing story, and the book will actually be available back on the Warrens website, and you can check that out at warrens.net. We want to thank our very special guest, Lorraine Warren, this evening for joining us. Thank you for tuning in to the Darkness on the Edge of Town Paranormal Radio Show. I hope you enjoyed this yourself as much as we enjoyed doing the show this evening.
Thank you very much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed this bonus little episode, a replay of our very first interview with Lorraine Warren. Her passing has been felt throughout the paranormal community, and we just wanted to honor her the best way we could. So yesterday, airing our very final interview, our very first interview, we hope that you enjoyed hearing the stories from Lorraine as much as we did when we got them originally. That's it for this week. We'll be back again next week with brand new episodes of Beyond the Darkness.